And a warm welcome today to Linda Yu, fellow in economics at St. Edmund Hall, Oxford University, and adjunct professor at London Business School. Professor Yu, welcome back to the program.
Jana, what a pleasure to be here.
Professor Yu, of course, we've all seen the OECD revisions to global growth. They're still projecting that we're going to be on a somewhat slower global growth trajectory than prior to the trade war commencing. But the numbers were revised upwards. In other words, they're projecting growth is not going to be as poor as had been anticipated. What do you make of the OECD report and its revisions?
I think the business cycle, so by which I mean interest rates coming down, is actually very much helping. And actually, funnily enough, one of the reasons why they had downgraded growth was because of all the uncertainty around U.S. tariffs since Liberation Day in April. So if you look at some of the, and it's not just the OECD, if you look at, for instance, the rating agencies, there's actually now a more of an assessment of the revenues that's going to come from the tariffs. So, for instance, it's estimated to help stabilize some government spending for the U.S. And I think so that combination of a slightly stronger fiscal position for the U.S. as the dominant economy, as well as perhaps seeing that the weaker growth could accelerate some of the interest rates coming down. You certainly see that with the Fed doing their first cut just this month. Well, their first rate cut this year, the restarting the rate cutting cycle. I think all of that is factoring into why you're beginning to get slightly better growth estimates. But I think the stress there is slightly. We're still not looking at very strong growth, but I think that the volatility from tariffs is now more expected, and that doesn't seem to be generating as much market dislocation, perhaps, as it did when they first came in the second quarter of this year, and I think that does help.
Let's talk about the Supreme Court, because it's actively going to be involved in hearing arguments regarding the legality of Trump's Emergency Power Act's tariffs. The wide speculation in this country is that they will probably be upheld, and even if they aren't, that the administration can find alternative means to impose the tariffs that go through Congress or use different legislation or authorization. Do you think that there is a risk that the government may have to repay a large portion of the tariffs already collected?
I think there might be a risk there because it's the basis of not just the reciprocal tariffs, but actually the trade agreements that the government has already made, including with the UK. So two lower courts, the International Trade Court and then the Appeals Court, have both ruled that the reciprocal tariffs are legal, as well as using tariffs to force countries like Canada, Mexico, China to not to export fentanyl. That is, according to the lower courts, not an appropriate use of the 1977 legislation, which is an Emergency Powers Act. So the appeals court decision was split 7-4. So it may be that the Supreme Court could overrule the lower courts, but I think for the most part, the expectation is the majority of the courts have been fairly consistent in that Congress did not intend for a legislation meant to be an emergency exercise of power to give untime-limited powers to set sweeping tariffs. And so one of the arguments that the government made, the Trump administration made, is that they can't afford to repay the trillions of dollars. So these are exactly the trillions of dollars I mentioned earlier. It's actually about $4 trillion that they're expecting to collect over the course of the administration, that they couldn't afford to repay that. But that isn't a basis for judges don't use that as basis to judge legislation. But you're absolutely right. So the other tariffs, so these are the Section 232 tariffs, they come under a different piece of legislation, which means that we've seen the announcement literally of additional tariffs on pharmaceuticals, as well as on machinery, as well as on a number of items, way in the double digits, 100%, 25%. So all of these sectoral tariffs are not being challenged. So even if the reciprocal tariffs get struck down, this set of tariffs are under a different piece of legislation where the Commerce Department makes a judgment on national security implications, and the White House goes ahead and does that. So I think we will expect to continue to see tariffs, but the Supreme Court decision is just going to add another layer of uncertainty. And I think ultimately, Congress needs to take a stand, I guess, assess, because they are ultimately the lawmakers. They're the ones who decide how much power to delegate to the executive to set tariffs. And that's the gist of the core decisions. So I think we will expect to see tariffs for some time, unless Congress actually steps in.
Professor, one other topic that I wanted to discuss briefly with you was the issue of stablecoins, which this administration has touted as a way to potentially help reduce the deficit in this country. Just how large is the stablecoin market? How large would it need to be to have a meaningful effect on the deficit?
Well, this actually could be a significant source of demand for short-term government debt, so T-bill. So the Genius Act, they're doing consultations on it now, but essentially T-bills maturing under 90 days could be used as the reserves to back the value of stablecoins. So stablecoins are digital currencies which are backed essentially one-to-one to fiat money. So given the growing demand for stablecoins, under the Genius Act, the U.S. has actually gone further than other countries, which actually puts its own debt in a very favorable position for those who want to use digital currencies instead of others. And I think there is actually quite a lot of potential for this to change the shape of the government debt market. But let me just say, there's also a lot of risks around this. We do know that cryptocurrencies, stablecoins, some of the biggest issuers like Circle, it's not as governed or as regulated, I should say, as other forms. Obviously, ways to invest in treasuries and in government debt. So I think this is still going to, it's going to play out for some time, but certainly the potential is there. And there's some recent survey that found that the younger generation holding digital assets or cryptocurrencies, I think more than half of young people surveyed had some form of it. So there is certainly demand.
Professor Yu, it's been a pleasure, as always, speaking with you. Please tell us where we can follow you and your work.
It's always a pleasure, Janet. You can find me at Linda Yu, LindaYueh, on social media, and my website is www.lindayueh.com.